Hi everyone, welcome to the University of Laws podcast. I'm your host, Rick Palmer, and today I've got a great interview for you. We are celebrating, as it's February, LGBT History Month, with a series of events and resources and so on, for things about LGBT and the law. Today's interview is absolutely fantastic. I had so much fun interviewing my guest. It is Tate Smith, who is a law student currently studying at the moment, who is an advocate for trans rights. And our conversation is all about the laws that affect trans people, about the rights that are being still affected, and some of the history about things that have changed, both for the good and the negative of trans people's rights. So take a listen and understand a little bit more about LGBT and the law.
Just to start off with, if you could let us know a little bit more about you, like the past, the present, and the future of where Tate's going to be.
Sure. So I'm Tate Smith. I'm a junior legal support secretary at Clifford Chance, and I study law part-time at Birkbeck University. I also volunteer at Gendered Intelligence, facilitating youth groups for trans kids under the age of 12. I've also done voluntary work over at Spectra, which are a fantastic health charity for LGBT people. I acted as a peer mentor to trans men there. And in the past year or so, I've been really, really active in my trans activism. So doing a lot of podcasts like these, interviews, articles, and been included in Clifford Chance's inclusion report and things similar to that, basically. So anything trans related, I'm practically involved in.
If so, when you think back over all the different legal landmarks that have happened and affected the trans community, both positively and negatively, what do you think is like one or a couple of the most significant things that have happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is Gender Recognition Act 2004, but it's also been a cause of a lot of problems for our community. With regards to recently, I would say with the Land Rover case, I think it's called, where we actually got legal recognition of non-binary people, and the government said that that actually falls underneath a protected characteristic of the Equality Act. So those two cases really stick out for me.
Yeah, two very important issues, and I think it's very important to
think as well from the outside looking in. Sometimes people think it's very minimal certain landmark points in time, but for someone from living in within the LGBT community, these landmark cases that happen, they're absolutely life-changing, and they can make you feeling less of a person as someone else. So these are hugely significant, and something that'd be really good, some of those would be great for anyone listening who's interested to like research and look a little bit deeper into how they came about. What are you hoping to get involved with legally at the moment?
I'm hoping to get involved in some way with the recent Tavistock Keira Bell case in the High Court, which has ruled that under 14 trans kids don't have GILIC consent in order to receive puberty blockers, and so as a result they will now have to get a court order after going through the lengthy NHS process in order to access these life-changing puberty blockers. I have a lot to say about the case, and obviously I won't get into it right now, but I'm really, really interested in getting involved in this case, because I, no matter what the outcome is, this is, like you say, life-changing for all involved, especially young trans people, and it's really going to change trans rights in this country, and it's doing so right now.
It's important for people to get involved both in and out of the community, so supporting by being an ally. But what's interesting with things like that, which is why it's great that you're getting involved, is quite often these legislations and these rules that are made against, like, you know, issues of human rights, is that people are making rules for communities that they're not part of. So, you know, rights that affect cultural communities based on maybe their race or religion are decided on by, you know, quite often in the UK, like white Catholic people, or things on gay marriage were being decided on by heterosexual people. So it's really great to see advocates from the community getting involved and making sure that the change is reflective of what our communities need. That's What do you think this the biggest legal issue out there at the moment that we really need to fight against?
Yeah, so the big legal issue I'm finding at the moment is the Freddie McConnell case. And he gave birth to his son. And he's at the time, he'd been on testosterone and been legally recognised as a man in the UK for about 7 years, I think. But upon giving birth to his son, they told him that he would not be able to be put down as the father on the birth certificate because he's, you know, legally recognized as mother, because I think the legal definition for that is whoever gives birth. And so therefore he would be the mother in their eyes because he gave birth to the child. And they actually gave him the option of putting parent one and parent two on birth certificates, which is offered to lesbian couples. But obviously the issue there is that he was in a relationship with a non-binary person. So they obviously didn't identify as lesbians or females in that regard. And I found the verdict very, very disappointing. And also the fact that it's been rejected by the Supreme Court a few years ago. So as a result, he's exhausted all of his appeals in the UK. But obviously, we've got Europe to think about. But I think this is going to be a real issue for the next few years to come. I mean, this isn't a case that we've heard about a trans man giving birth. We had one in Australia in around 2007 or 2010, something like that. And, you know, that was made a big fuss of. But this is becoming the norm now, and families are changing. We don't have the perfect nuclear family anymore. We don't have a cis mom and a cis dad and, you know, and then the son and a daughter, you know, family, you know, the looks of them are changing now. And the real issue is who is defined as a mother. And I just can't just grasp my head around how someone who has lived for so long as a man and is legally recognized under the Gender Recognition Act and has done such an amazing thing by giving birth, you know, frankly, the most feminine experience of all, and they put the label of mother on him.
I mean, you've put that really well, and it's part of the bigger issue that a lot of people struggle with, which is there is a need for us to get out of this weird, archaic habit that we've got, that we're raised with, which is actually very damaging to people in all walks of life. You know, the fact that we're raised and we're overly masculinizing children and making them, you know, giving anxiety problems to young boys that don't want to, you know, grow up a certain way, and then telling, you know, there's still a strong message of making women wives rather than, you know, supporting people into just being whatever their personality develops into. And I think because of this, we really need to have a wider review of just this bizarre gender identity that we force on a lot of people. That's when people are being given the gender that they identify with, they're still struggling. But when you just think, you know, quite simply, that case you've talked about is a father wanting to just be recognised rightly, and it's bizarre that you know the law just isn't permitting that. It's very, and it seems almost weirdly bureaucratic, like, you know, oh no, yeah, this is what we need our form to say because this is what our criteria is. Great, well, your criteria is out of date, so you need to fix your problem, not mine. It's very bizarre, isn't it? It's important that people hear about stuff like this, because I had heard of that case, but I hadn't heard of the petitioning it. But it is now. It's a very sad thing to hear that it's still going on. And it's just, it's also a lot of what happens when you look at human rights violations in the LGBT community is that it's often that changing that right doesn't particularly affect anyone. It just supports the equality of the person that's being, you know, not being treated fairly. So it's very odd that there are these people that prevent it and these hurdles that do pop up, because you think, well, it doesn't really make sense why that hurdle exists, because it's not going to hurt anyone if it changes. Something that I think a lot of people do struggle with is they don't know how they can help. So for anyone who is outside of the trans community but wants to be an advocate for them and wants to be an ally, what do you think is the best way for someone to support?
I think to speak to trans people in real life. Obviously, online resources is as good as any. You know, reading up on Pink News, that's an amazing resource to be looking into what trans people are experiencing today, and also Stonewall Glossary, just so that you're using the right terms and you're not offending anyone. But I think the greatest learning resource that you have is to speak to actual trans people. Obviously, you've got to be a bit careful about how you go around it, because, you know, us trans people, we're not, you know, encyclopedias ready at your disposal. But, you know, there are some trans people, including myself, that are really, really open to being asked questions. And, you know, I don't get triggered easily. You know, I'm more than happy to educate people on the correct terminology and give them some insight into my story. So if you don't know any trans people in real life, I think your best bet is to look to all the great trans YouTubers out there who have made fantastic videos about their transitions, and, you know, videos where they debunk myths and they give you some insight into their stories, and you'll learn a lot through them.
That's a really a good idea, because there is a lot of people out there that are speaking, because, you know, there's people who are isolated in the community and might not have an ally or someone to speak to. And that's a good point, is there's a lot of people out there. You know, the beauty of the internet and social media is, yes, it brings some hate from some places, but it also lets us spread a lot of positivity. And there's another good resource that I follow on Instagram. It's called Where Love Is Illegal. And it's a really good Instagram post. I assume it's more. I think it's got a website. It's with like a charity. And it posts regularly about LGBTQI plus stories. And it's about, it's got stories that are in, like, you know, Western, UK, US. But it has stories about everyone from lots of different communities and what their experience has been. And it's really interesting. It's been like, you know, it's people that have been caught in same-sex relationships in countries that don't accept it and have fled, or it's people that have just had, you know, they've not been chased out of the country, but maybe they've isolated themselves from from their family who have not been accepting of them. Had people from different communities that haven't been able to have access to medical support to transition. It's just really interesting stuff that I would recommend anyone to look at it, because it also opens your eyes and makes you a lot more aware of the different struggles in the community that you might not be familiar with, and then it obviously takes you towards different ways to support. So it's a really good Where Love Is Illegal, and I follow it just on Instagram because they do a nice like update post quite regularly.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
A question that I was thought of then, which would be really quite interesting, is, do you think there's been anything that's been brought on by the pandemic that's really heavily hit the trans community?
The gender recognition act consultation that Liz put out in September. So whilst the Black Lives Matter movement was going on, there seemed to be this kind of underlying gossip that we were getting from the underground and through LGBT kind of like news articles, that there was going to be a response finally after 3 years of begging Theresa May to change the Gender Recognition Act. And we were told by Boris and Liz Truss that it would be reviewed in the summer. And my felt sense was that they felt that because everyone was so focused on the pandemic, and also the world's eyes were on the Black Lives Matter movement, that the trans community would not be prioritizing their own rights. Right. So, like, as a result, this was all going on in the background during the summer. And then we finally got our consultation paper in September, right at the end. And it was extremely disappointing. I mean, I could flick through it within about 30 seconds. I've read LinkedIn articles longer than that paper.
Yeah.
And and what came out of it was that there is going to be no change to the Gender Recognition Act, and there will not be any ability to be able to self-identify, which is what we really, really wanted to get out of this consultation. I mean, the community is crying out for it, and there's just so many barriers And the trans community has been hit extremely hard during the pandemic because NHS clinics closed, they weren't accepting new people. I mean, the waiting list, I don't know if you've heard, but it's atrocious. I mean, I signed up October 2018, and I obviously had to go through the private route. You know, cut forward to nearly 3 years later, I still haven't been seen, and they are seeing people who first got admitted, I've been told, in September 2017. So just to give you an idea, yeah, of how, because you effectively go on a waiting list to go on a waiting list, and there's just so many barriers now. And now, you know, people who are trying to go for the NHS route are being told to go to private clinics. And when I met with a gender specialist in the summer to discuss a separate issue, I asked her out of interest, you know, how's work been? And she said that she's seen 80 new patients a month, which means that she's seen four new people a day. And it is going to come to a point where that is just too much for a gender specialist to take on. And the fact that the NHS is just, you know, they're just telling them to kind of go ahead and go privately because they don't want to deal with them is really, really disappointing. So, yeah, the pandemic has hit us hard because of the waiting times being extended and the clinics not having the resources to deal with us in the pandemic, but also this really disappointing consultation paper that's come out. And we haven't heard anything since. I mean, we've been told that in a couple of years, we're going to hopefully get four more gender identity clinics, which is great. I mean, it's what we need. We've got, you know, hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands that are on the waiting list. Nothing's been actually changed to make a process of getting a gender recognition certificate easier for us. They've said they'll reduce the fee from £140, but they haven't told us exactly how much. And the fact of the matter is that still stands as a massive, massive barrier for me to be able to be legally recognized as a man. I mean, it says male on my passport. I did my deed poll for free, which anyone can do. You know, I changed my name and my pronouns socially years ago. Everybody knows me at work as Tate. But in the eyes of the law, looking at my birth certificate, you would say Tate Smith, a female, which is really, really disheartening. And I have to go through a process where I pay £140. I have to print off every single utility bill from the past 2 years that has my name on it. And, you know, like any other young person, I've just moved into a flat of my own, so I don't even have a month full of utility bills, let alone 2 years. Well, and neither will
you. I don't. Yeah, I'm 33 and I can do that.
Neither would a 16 or an 18-year-old or you know, even in going into your 20s. And then you have to send through all of these documents proving your identity, that you've been living in your quote-unquote chosen gender. I hate that phrase. And then it goes to, you know, a panel, lays it all out in front of them, a panel which never, ever meets you in real life. They don't look at it holistically at all. They don't know anything about you. And all they're seeing is all these documents, and they get to decide whether or not you are legally recognized as the gender that you identify with. And that process looks like it's not going to be changed. So yeah, the community is really struggling right now.
I think what a lot of people, like we said earlier, it's people making decisions that aren't having the experiences for the people they're making decisions of. And I think the sad thing is when you actually look at what's being asked for, it's not a great deal. It's just being asked to be recognized as who someone is. And I think the really sad thing is it's not actually life changing. It's like it's life starting. Like the limitations that you're being given, for all these people that are trying to go through this process. And I didn't realize, but like you've seen, some people are looking at 4 years down the line and just getting seen. You know, this is, that's not 4 years of oh, it's coming. That's, you know, I need to get this started. And when I do, that will be really great. Now, this is someone who's trapped in an experience that's like ruining their life. It's completely unjust. And yeah, I really hope that people listening find that this is, you know, something that we actually do need to advocate against. And the fact that the government's not willing to make a change isn't acceptable. And that's the reason we keep trying and trying and trying until it's changed, because it's basic human rights that are being asked for. It's not any special treatment or anything. And there's much more that needs to be done on top of this. This is a drop in the ocean, really, of making sure everything's, there's equality out there. But, you know, it's an excellent start that's going to just give people the recognition that they just deserve, as anyone would deserve.
Yes, yeah. Most definitely. Thank you.
For anyone out there listening, there's two ways of looking at charities. Is there anyone who might be listening and they might feel isolated or need some support? But also, for other people who just want to help, or if someone might want to, you know, share their experience to be an advocate, are there any charities or organisations that you think are particularly successful to get involved with?
Sure, there's plenty, and definitely loads that I can tell you from my own experience, starting my transition at kind of, you know, university and younger than that age. Spectra is a really good charity. I mentioned them earlier in this episode. So they are a sexual health charity for LGBT people, but they provide really, really great trans services, not just sexual health. So they actually run support groups monthly, which before COVID was in West London and Central London. Now they're being done virtually every Friday. Anyone can sign up. And they have counseling. So you would be counseled by someone who also identifies as trans or non-binary. And they also have a peer mentoring scheme as well. So you can sign up to be mentored and get some guidance in your transition, or alternatively, sign up as a actual mentor, which is a paid role, and you can give back to the community, obviously depending on how far you are in your transition. There's also really great other charities such as Gendered Intelligence, and they also run support groups. I volunteer there with trans kids, and they do a lot in the, you know, workplace space, really great at educating people and providing training. So if you're interested in getting your workplace on board, definitely get in contact with them. And, you know, there's a lot of resources at your fingertips too. If you're struggling, you've got LGBT Switchboard. If you need somebody to talk to, you've got the specialist trans housing at Stonewall Housing. If you find that you're made homeless, and there's lots and lots of websites that you could do a simple Google of, and you can get advice, you know, Tumblr pages where you, you know, see other guys or girls transitions, and you can get specific advice relating to the UK and the NHS and private process on there. But definitely check out the charities, because they'll be your main source of education and also support networks.
That's fantastic. And I think it's really important that, yeah, people know that these are available to them. And also, if for anyone that's listening, that's you know, still in school and colleges, your teachers and your staff there should be really open to be supporting you through this. And I know that I've worked with a lot that are really there and helpful. But, you know, if you don't find that, then you do just contact, you know, there's people in the community, or there's the you know, go onto these charities, onto their websites, or give them a call, and there's always support everywhere for you. So you should never need to be alone. It's just that sometimes maybe you have to look outside of your close circle, but there, it's still there, so never feel isolated. It's very important. I want to say a massive thank you for joining and talking through some of those issues that we've discussed there. It's been really fascinating, and I've definitely learned a lot, so I really appreciate you sharing that information, and I look forward to our upcoming events. So thank you very much.
Amazing. Thank you.